Here's Steve Kaplowitz and Adrian Broaddus.
All right, that was interesting to say the least. Look, I'll put it this way, folks. When we are delivering this radio show in 2023, we can control most things. We can. We can control most things. However, when we have server issues, computers crash, and we are not able to take the network off the air, that's beyond our control. Now, the good news is at least you had something to listen to for the last 15 minutes. I'm happy about that because right now, you know, if we don't have this, if we don't have this ESPN radio show, we have nothing for that amount of time. So at least we were able to, let you listen to the national network for a little while. But man, it's tough sometimes. Adrian, what a weird feeling. For the first time in your radio career, you were powerless. We were powerless. There's nothing we could do instead of talking right over those guys, and we didn't want to do that.
Yeah, see, that was really weird, but I'm happy that we're back. I'm happy that we're ready to go, and we got a big show today, 3 hours here on a Wednesday.
We do. You know, and here's the thing. Jay Jaffe, I was planning on having that come up next, but we just started. Should we save Jay for the 6 o'clock hour today since we're just getting underway and we haven't really had a chance to even set the tone for the show?
Is that cool for Jay? Do you think you'll be okay with him?
Let me text him right now and see what he says. All right? I'll text him. And before we go to break, hopefully I can get an answer from Jay on that. So, yeah, we got a lot to cover on the show today. Jeff Erickson will join us in our 5 o'clock hour. And then I'm not sure yet about Jay. Well, we'll see what happens. Let me send the text off and go from there. But I'll say this. Meanwhile, it's good to be back. Good to be back with you on a Wednesday afternoon. And clearly a lot going on locally, a lot going on nationally. I love the story you talked about with Steven Montes getting a 49ers tryout during rookie minicamp. I think that's a very cool story that I wouldn't have caught otherwise.
Yeah, it's so interesting, right? Because the 49ers, as it stands right now going into the offseason, have a lot of uncertainty around their quarterback position. And maybe, you know, some people have hinted at Sam Darnold taking over the role early on before Brock Purdy is healthy. Some have also thought that they would look elsewhere. They've got other quarterbacks on their roster right now. And Steven Montes as part of the rookie minicamp. He's getting a tryout. He's not a rookie. He's bounced around from teams like Washington, Detroit, most recently had a stint in the XFL with Seattle. So now he finds himself back with a rookie with a tryout with the 49ers during rookie minicamp.
And the question is, could he beat out potentially 30-year-old Brandon Allen and be the fourth quarterback on the roster?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, I'm saying that because Brandon Allen has been around the NFL for a while. So whenever it comes to those veterans right there, that's tough to try to beat right there. But hey, for Steven Montes, he just wants more opportunities. And I think that's great for him, whether it's here with the 49ers or signing elsewhere. Just get as many opportunities as you can.
No, you're right. That's a good point. And I am looking forward to seeing what ends up happening. And yeah, it's interesting when they show you a highlight of Montes at Colorado saying that they found their quarterback for rookie minicamp. So, hey, wish him the best and hope it can happen.
Me too. I feel like Montes, unfortunately, never really had a good opportunity with the Washington Commanders. There was a thought that he could be thrown into the mix when they shuffled between quarterbacks like Carson Wentz and Taylor Heineke. But no, nonetheless, he finds himself released from Washington after that, then doesn't really get an opportunity with Detroit, finds himself in Seattle, but he's Ben DiNucci's backup in the XFL. So maybe here with San Francisco, he could try to make the roster and try to break through.
Maybe so. I hope so. It's definitely something we could talk about on the show today. Oh, just got good news. Jay said yes.
Nice.
6 o'clock hour is fine with him. So we'll have Jay then at 6:20. We'll also have Jeff Erickson at 5:20. And that means open 4 o'clock hour, which gives us a chance to reset the show when we come back and kind of act like it's 4:02 and we're just starting the program out today, which I like a lot.
Yeah, me too, Steve. We'll catch up and we'll get ready to go here for a busy day.
Good to have you with us here on the program. And as Paul Marmolejo just tweeted out, hashtag LOL. Yeah, it is. And he said, hashtag set what tone? Well, we got to set the tone for the show. We got to set it up for you today, Paul. We got to do it. don't know if we could talk about green grass like you've got on your Twitter profile, but we'll try to make the show more interesting than watching the grass grow here in your lawn. So, yeah, we got a lot of good stuff for you today. And by the way, I do want to also welcome everybody officially to not just Sports Talk, but I got news for you. I want to welcome all of you to Wellness Wednesday. That's right. It's Wellness Wednesday with MD305. They've got specials including $5 20-ounce wellness drinks. Health drinks are turmeric or moringa-based with your choice of flavor, mango, peach, or passion fruit. And we're going to be even playing a little trivia quiz today, give you a chance to win a family four-pack of wellness drinks. That's right. Looking forward to that. 4126 North Mesa, Suite F, just up the road from us. They're open Wednesday through Sunday. You want to learn more? MD305.com. Let's go to Charlie One and kick it off right. Get our first traffic update of the afternoon here on Sports Talk as we continue. 505-6009, that is our telephone number. 505-6009. Get you right on in and through to the program. Again, we'd love to hear from you. Wow. This is very cool. I like this. I didn't even know about this. This could be a new sport for UTEP to add in the near future. Apparently, Conference USA is adding bowling in 2023-24 season. So starting this summer, or this fall, bowling for Conference USA. In fact, here are your teams who will be involved in the CUSA Bowling League. All right, here we go. Arkansas State, Jacksonville State, Louisiana Tech, Sam Houston, Stephen F. Austin, Tulane, Valpo, Vanderbilt, and Youngstown State. Six of those nine were part of the 2023 NCAA Championship, including Vanderbilt, the national champ, and the national runner-up was Arkansas State. Huh. I did not realize bowling has been an NCAA-sponsored sport for the last 20 years. That I did not know. And for the previous academic year, 100 NCAA institutions took part in the sport. I would love UTEP to have a bowling team. Wouldn't you? Like a female bowling team and they were student athletes? I mean, let's be honest. If there was ever a sport, a dream sport, where you do not have to worry about training, you don't have to worry about conditioning, all you have to do is throw a 15 or, now I don't know what they, it used to be like a 14 to 16 pound ball. I don't know. But point is, you throw a bowling, roll a bowling ball. That's it. This is the greatest sport ever. We should have a UTEP bowling team. Orly would be a financial NIL supporter.
I was going to say, who's our resident person who is the bowler? It's Orly. That's I forgot who it was. I'm glad you mentioned it. Yeah, this is real interesting, Steve. First off, I love the fact that the only CUSA representative that actually competes in most of the sports in men's and women's college sports is La Tech.
Yep.
So, yeah, there's room for growth out of the current members of Conference USA to add to bowling in the next year season. So, I mean, this is actually rapidly approaching. This will happen in October when Conference USA institutes this, correct?
It will. It will. Plus, UTEP could be, like, they could compete with La Tech, Sam Houston, Stephen F. Austin, Tulane. Those are all schools that are in close proximity to them. They don't have to worry so much about Youngstown State, Vanderbilt, Valpo, and Arkansas State and Jacksonville State. They could stay with the regional schools. And then maybe New Mexico. And I'm surprised Mocha hasn't picked it up at New Mexico State. That would be something that would make sense for them, too.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it makes a lot of sense for everybody. Now, I'm serious when I say this. How do you scout? How do you recruit for bowling? Is there like an online bowling league for college and high school, like prospects and stuff like that? I have no clue about this. And then you say there are a couple teams in this Conference USA who actually have competed for championships. Will Conference USA be known as a bowling league now? Not necessarily a basketball or track and field. It'll be known for its bowling titles.
Hey, I am looking at a list on Max Preps of the most bowlers, most followed bowling teams. They've got them. They're there. So there are bowling teams around the country. And I'm sure maybe there's some good bowlers here in El Paso, some good high school bowlers. I bowled when I was in high school. I loved it. Let me tell you something, all right? I was back in those days, because now we're talking mid-80s, early to mid-80s. But I think between like 83 or 84 and like 86 or 87, I bowled at Thunderbird Lanes. Butch was my bowling coach. Actually, he like ran the leagues for us, and wow. I kept all my bowling patches, because in those days they gave you patches when you did something special. So I've got all these patches that are probably, I don't know, almost 40 years old, that when I was younger, that was a big deal for me.
Steve, you could have been a prospect if UTEP had bowling at that time. You could have been a kid.
I was a lefty. Lefty bowlers were in commodity in those days.
You could have negotiated an NIL deal, like fast forward now to 2023, if you were a youngster now and you were still competing. I'm looking at this right now. There is a Texas State High School Bowling Association that actually has tournaments statewide for boys and girls on varsity and JV levels. So, yeah, this is a deal, I guess.
I think so, too. Brian from downtown even said, imagine when you get a press release that says UTEP placed Leticia Torres on the IR for a blister on her thumb. She's out for 2 to 3 weeks. I mean, that could be the case. You're right, Brian. We could have bowling injuries. We could have bowling, you know, that could be the case. Thumb blisters could be a problem.
You know, one of the things we won't have is the crazy city of El Paso's weather impacting any of these bowling matches. So that's another thing, is the fact that this is held indoors is beneficial for El Pasoans, because you don't have to worry about the weather outside.
Listen, I am excited about this. I love the fact that CUSA is going to go and start putting bowling together as a sport. I love the fact that most of the schools aren't even in the conference. I think that's hilarious, because that probably means that when CUSA seriously explored this, most of the schools are like, nah, no, we'll pass. Hey, I love it. Good for them. And good for the schools that already have bowling as a sport.
Yeah, seriously. And I'm curious right now, which places in El Paso can you bowl at that are like kind of regulation for what they're asking for right now? Also, are there any El Pasoans, like youngsters who are competitive bowlers? I'm sure there are. Like that, I'm sure there's so many great athletes in this city at the youth and high school level. I could see some bowlers at the younger ages here in this city.
Me too.
You know, competing in tournaments.
Me too. I just sent a text to Jim Center, and I just said, how soon until UTEP has a bowling team? Then I gave him the bowling ball and pins emoji.
Nice.
So hopefully we get an answer on this soon. I mean, I'm willing to bet that is an easy sport for them to work on. What do you need? You need some shoes, a couple balls, a bag, maybe some that's and lanes to throw on. That's all you need.
Yeah, and by the way, speaking of shirts and all that kind of stuff, can you imagine UTEP with that orange going around with some bowling shirts around, you know, town?
And that would be that could be the most popular UTEP item, the bowling shirts.
I'm with you. And then you could get some you could sell some bowling balls, color of UTEP as well. So you got that orange out there. It pops. It really does.
Do you know that when Mike Price went bowling for the second time with the Miners, he rolled a bowling ball down the hallway of the Larry K. Durham Center to tell everybody that we were bowling. And he had like a bowling outfit on with a ball. And I think the ball was orange and he had his shoes on. It was hilarious.
Well, if there ever is a UTEP team that does bowling, they should throw that as the image for the press release. The image of head coach Mike Price, getting excited ahead of the second time they were bowling.
No, you're right. This is good stuff. I'm excited. Hey, good way to get this segment kicked off, right? I would never have expected this. Thanks for that. It was a good find, Adrian. Love that.
Yeah, I was surprised when I saw that pass my feed. And a lot of people were really upset because they were saying that this takes over the Southland Bowling League. So the
Ooh.
Southland had a bowling conference.
Not anymore.
And yeah, not anymore because of all these teams heading over to Conference USA.
Look at that. All right. More in a moment as we continue. 33 pass. Let's go to Adrian right now and get this bottom of the hour Sports Center update. As we continue here on Sports Talk, you know, it's a good story. It's a really, that's a very, very interesting story about, you know, bowling coming to town. And by the way, J.J. Redick, a pretty good story too. Not bad. I'm thinking, Adrian, this needs to happen. I really do. I think this just needs to happen. Sooner rather than later.
Okay, I'm just going to pitch something to you. The rec at UTEP is awesome. I'm a huge fan of it. Just expand it a little bit. There is a little bit of land on the backside of that rec.
Yeah.
Expand it a little bit and throw a bowling alley out there.
What?
Then you can hold open tryouts for kids who are on campus, who are already UTEP students. You could fill out a roster with some high school and some other prospects across the country, but then fill out your roster with some walk-ons and people who try out.
You're really giving us some thought.
I am.
You've definitely taken the deep dive into what bowling can do for you. I like that.
You know, we should be I don't even know what you call it, the director of bowling operations. We should just try to volunteer ourselves into that role for this, if UTEP ever does something like this, maybe.
I'm waiting for a response from UTEP athletic director, Jim Center. That would be phenomenal. So, anyway, yeah, it's good stuff. Good stuff. 36 past as we continue here on Sports Talk. Jay Jaffe will join us in our 6 o'clock hour now. If you're just tuning into the program, we were about 14 minutes late today. We had a server issue, but we've been resolved. We are good now, and we'll be able to deliver Sports Talk for the rest of the day here on 600 ESPN El Paso with Jeff Erickson coming up in our 5 o'clock hour here on the show. Bob Huggins, let me ask you, okay? Cost him, what, 3 games and $1 million. Okay. Now, this is 2023, not 1993, okay? Should the comments that Bob made cost him his job?
Ooh, man, it's a loaded question. I feel like there's no reason whatsoever a head coach should go out and say anything like that on a radio show. And we've seen coaches, people with power positions who have been fired for saying way less. And, you know, I think I'll leave it at that. Huggins is somebody who has put his, you know, he's really made a name for himself with West Virginia. So maybe he has a lot of ties there and they felt like they couldn't cut ties with him at that point. But still, I think it's inexcusable. I'm pretty disappointed hearing all this come from him.
I'm surprised about the choice of words just in today's age, because even if that's the kind of thing Bob says around when he's just around friends, around buddies and stuff like that, if he still uses that, you can't. These are the things you can't say in public anymore. You can't do that unless you don't mind losing your job, because that's just what it costs. Now, think about this, okay? This is the largest fine ever, I believe, is what they've said. It's one of the biggest in college athletics. He loses $1 million on his salary. He goes from 4.2 mil to 3.2 mil. And I believe he's given a 3-game suspension and has to take sensitivity training.
So for that, I would feel like, I just want to say, is this kind of a slap on the wrist? Because the first 3 games are usually meaningless anyway. If you say the first 3 games of conference play, those are relevant games, and that's actually, you know, kind of that, that would actually be a bigger, you know, kind of repercussion against him. But, you know, just fining him $1 million, he's making multi-millions all the time. So I don't know, man. I'm still not satisfied with all this here with Bob Huggins.
No, and the fact is he went on a news radio AM station in Cincinnati when he discussed a game against Xavier, which apparently involved some rubber items that were thrown on the court during the game. And that's when he used the derogatory word. And he used it twice and said it. And, you know, the problem is this. Just times have changed. Society's changed. People have changed. And things you either said or did years ago without any repercussions. You can't do it anymore unless you really, you know, don't think he's going to get fired. Look what happened last week in the Oakland A's broadcast when Glenn Kuiper made a terrible slip trying to say the Negro Leagues, except the other word came out and, you know, now he's been suspended. The guy's been doing games for 1,000 years for the Oakland A's.
Yeah, you have a responsibility when you're in a position of power like this, and it's one of your biggest responsibilities is to not say things out of context that could really, really hurt people down the line. And you know what? I feel like you should own up to what you said in this situation. Bob Huggins, he's going to face a ton of backlash,
yep.
And he continues to do so across social media. And I don't feel like this suspension right here was probably enough for something like this.
Well, I mean, you're right. Suspended for conference games, that's a big deal. And he, by the way, he apologized, I think, once he realized the firestorm that was happening as a result and that he could have lost his job. Maybe that's when the apology, because right afterwards when he was made aware of it, he didn't apologize. It only came later after everything. By then trying to make, you know, damage control.
Yeah, why would you ever say it on a radio show, too? That's even worse. You know, so many people are listening, especially him being a face of the program. You're representing a lot of players on that team as well. It's a really bad leader right there, in my opinion.
He is a Hall of Fame coach who has won over 850 games in his career. It's amazing. So, you know, he's been a legendary coach. He's been in West Virginia for 15 years already. And before that, he was a legend when he was over at Cincinnati. But, hey, you just can't do that anymore. You can't, there's certain things you can't say. So, one of the questions we're asking is, did Bob Huggins get off easy with $1 million pay reduction and a 3-game suspension? 505-6009. That is our telephone number as we continue here on Sports Talk. We'll come back more in a moment. Stay with us. Taking you up till 7 o'clock right here on 600 TSPN El Paso. Sports Talk as we continue. Welcome back again to MD305 Wellness Wednesday. That's right. They got a special going on right now. $5 20-ounce wellness drinks. They're healthy. They're delicious. And you can enjoy either a turmeric or moringa base with your choice of flavors, mango, peach, or passion fruit at 4126 North Mesa, Suite F. Open Wednesday through Sunday. Today is also Wing Wednesday. 85-cent plain wings or dollar flavored wings. We had them last week. They were amazing. From our friends at MD305 and MD305.com. All right. Let's give away a family 4-pack of wellness drinks from our friends at MD305. And this is a good trivia quiz. This is tough. In fact, Adrian, I'm impressed with this question because I think this could end up stumping some people for a while.
I think so too, Steve. UTEP right now is tied for 10th in Division I athletics on the men's side for total national championships, okay? Which is interesting in itself. What is the last UTEP men's athletic team to win an NCAA national championship? Not an individual, an entire team. We need the sport and the year.
Ooh. All right. So they're tied for 10th in men's Division I athletics for total national championships. How many do they have?
Let me double check. I had this page open. Put me on spot. Let me check on this.
All right. I'm just curious because I know there's probably quite a few when you start to think about UTEP over the years. But this is a good one. This is a really good one.
Total of 21 national championships.
Wow.
For UTEP. How about that?
21 national titles.
That's right.
It's amazing. And we want to know the last UTEP men's athletic team to win an NCAA national championship. Sport and year. 505-6009. That's our telephone number. 505-6009. If you win, you're going to get a family 4-pack of wellness drinks, courtesy of our friends at MD305, 4126 North Mesa. One of these days, by the way, I want to get the ladies in so we can have them do a Shibuya roll call live on the show.
Oh, they'll be ready to go. If
I know
tell them that, they will be ready to go. You hear it all the time through our show. And the Shibuya roll call.
I'm excited about that. All right. So if you want to try to guess on this, hey, good luck to you. I'm excited to see what guesses come in. 505-6009. That's a great trivia quiz because we've never had anything like that question before. 21 national championships, huh?
Yeah, it's pretty impressive for the Miners over time. It also tells you that they still stack up there among some of the historic teams across NCAA.
I'm with you. Line ringing in. Good luck to you. See if you win. Raywork Productions just tweeted the show at 600 ESPN El Paso. I worked at Bolero Lanes on Dyer for a couple of years. I could be the head coach of the UTEP bowling team. Ha ha ha, says Raywork Productions. A bowling team would be awesome. No, I agree. A bowling team would be awesome. And I hope it could be a reality. We'll find out. After asking, UTEP Director of Athletics Jim Center, will bowling be on the list anytime soon for UTEP? They're always looking to add female sports because of Title IX. They're still short. They're not yet balanced like they need to be. So I've heard swimming and diving. I've heard, other types of sports like equestrian. Hey, man, I think, you know what? Maybe, just maybe, bowling could be a possibility. Anyway, good opportunities if UTEP decides to go in that direction. We already have a winner that fast?
Yeah, one and done. How about that?
Tony Huerta, very nice. Very nice.
He said he guessed this one, too.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I like it.
We asked the last UTEP men's athletic team to win an NCAA national championship, sport and year. What are we looking for here?
We're looking for track and field. 1982 is the last national championship that UTEP has had. You have to go all the way back to 1982, Steve.
Wow. Is that their last national championship period, or is that just in men's sports? Has there been a women's national championship since?
So remember, a lot of individual national champions, and a lot of, especially in track and field, that sport in particular. But this is the last team national championship that we have on the men's side.
1982, huh?
Yeah,
all right,
that's right.
I was alive for that one. That's good. All right. Congratulations, Tony, and enjoy the 4-pack of wellness drinks from MD305. You want to learn more online, MD305.com. Come back with hour number two next. Sports Talk continues, 600 ESPN El Paso.
Sports Studio. Here's Steve Kaplowitz and Adrian Broaddus.
Hour number two of Sports Talk underway. Thank you, Buzz Adams. Jim Center did text me back. Said that bowling is not on the list of sports that UTEP is currently looking at. He did say that he would volunteer to be the coach, though, because his 125 nice pin average would draw the recruits in.
Wow. We learned something today. That's interesting. He's
so
a bowler.
He bowls 125. Look, here's my story when it comes to bowling. I bowled in, three or four leagues over the years, and every time I bowl, it's the same crap, okay? I always bowl my best games on the first night of the league when you set your average. And I never come close to those scores the rest of the season. And unfortunately, the higher your score is, the lower your handicap is. So what I should be doing is tanking. And instead, I always roll a really good opening three games. And the next thing you know, I've found a way to sabotage my team.
That's right. And at that point, you could actually carry the team later on in the season if that's the case. Steve,
tank
early.
Right. So that's exactly what I need to do. I need to be rolling like Jim. I need to roll in the 120s.
Yeah.
And then start throwing, 170 to 200 games, and I'm good to go. But I usually think I averaged like 175 in the first games, which is really high for me. And then I never got close to that because I'm usually anywhere in like the probably the 150 to 170, 180 range is normal for me. I'll have a couple clunkers, but for the most part, I'm always in that 150 to 180 range bowling.
So you're a bowler too? I mean, like, we've got bowlers here.
I like it.
I can't even tell you what I've ever, like, you know, a score I've ever gotten. So I like this.
But I haven't bowled competitively in probably, 20? No, not 20 years, but it's been a while. It's probably been like 15 years.
Wow, okay, I got you. I mean, it's hard to find the leagues at probably now,
yeah,
like you used to, right?
Well, we used to bowl out of Bolo Paso on the east side.
Yeah,
a couple of people from the radio station who were working at the same time. Quinton Martinez, who worked with me on Sports Talk, he was a great bowler. Johnny Walker bowled back when he was here. So, yeah, we had some pretty good bowlers back in the day. It was a lot of fun.
I love this. I love the fact that we're talking bowling today here because of Conference USA adding the sport this year in 2023. I hope UTEP maybe down the line can make it a priority.
I feel bad that I gave away in a garage sale years ago my 600 ESPN El Paso bowling shirt.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I never thought about it. Yeah.
Oh.
It was back when we were News Talk Radio.
Oh, man. That bowling shirt would be worth a lot of money.
Which reminds me, by the way. So when we were News Talk Sports, okay, this was the only sports radio show in those days. It was all News Talk. When Paul Strelzin and Back Talk left 600 ESPN El Paso, but back then it was just News Talk Sports KRD, we had a contest for a morning show replacement host. We did like a reality contest. It was almost like the American Idol of morning shows, and we had about, I don't know, 20 different people compete. Well, anyway, Patrick Condoladia won the contest, and he ended up probably having about a three-year run with us, a 2 to 3 year run on Morning Drive doing our morning show. And Patrick was a comedian, stand-up, who also used to have a lot of comedy driver's ed that he became very well known for in El Paso. But he toured, he went around the country, and you know, he kind of settled in here as a morning radio host. And we found out, I guess, this morning on social media that Patrick had just passed away from cancer. So really sad news, and again, our condolences to the Candelaria family. And all I could tell you is this, folks, when I worked with Patrick many, many years ago, he always came in with a smile on his face, always delivered a terrific 3 or 4 hours of morning radio, and was just somebody that I always, very, very likable person and likable personality. And it's really a shame to hear that he had passed. But again, on behalf of everybody here at KRD and Town Square Media, our condolences to the Candelaria family on the passing of Patrick Candelaria. 8 past the hour as we continue here on Sports Talk. Up next, we'll have Jeff Erickson from RotoWire joining us on the program. And looking forward to Jeff coming on and talking some fantasy with us as we continue. Ah, all right. This is nice. Paul Marmolejo is giving me grass tips to have a green grass.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. Nice. A lot of mentions of Paul these past couple days.
He's very active. He's very active on Twitter.
He tweets us a lot.
He does. Although, I've noticed something. There's nothing about the Hype Twins the last couple of days.
Yeah, I know. He's throwing some new ones that we haven't seen. Like, we have not seen Nerd Miner. That's a new hashtag we've seen recently. He's also done hashtag Earn Your Spot Coach. So,
I do like the hashtag WiseUp915.
Yeah, that's got to be a t-shirt, man. I mean,
I agree with you.
Do it before we do, man.
Get it done.
We do it.
Yeah, capitalize on that while you have the chance. That's exactly right. Anyway, so yes, we've got a lot more in store for you. We'll do some fantasy coming up in our 5 o'clock hour. Jay Jaffe will join us next hour. And if you're wondering why is Jay coming on today in the 6 o'clock hour and not in the 5 o'clock hour, well, we didn't come on in the 4 o'clock hour. We didn't come on time. We were 14 minutes into ESPN radio. We had some server issues going on. And essentially what happened was our computer's locked. And when the computer locks around here, we can't turn off ESPN Radio. So that's what ended up happening. We couldn't get ourselves on the air. But the good news is, when you don't have to, I mean, when you know that we at least have programming on the radio, that's a good thing. So, you know, we'll be with you soon enough. Let's put it that way. And I'm happy that we are here. How about the news? This is so interesting. How about the news today? You know, FAU is so good in basketball. Now, in football, they landed a huge fish in Casey Thompson, the former Texas quarterback, the former Nebraska quarterback. He gets to reunite with Tom Herman out at FAU next season, and will be transferring out to go play for the Owls.
Yeah, first off, Tom Herman ending up at Florida Atlantic amid their transition to the American Athletic. I really like that hire in the first place, because Herman, while there have been a lot of people you know, in the NFL side of things who worked with him, with, you know, kind of like the Chicago Bears side of things, they did not like him at that position, but he's a college coach. This is where he is most successful. He does transform teams when they're kind of, you know, like kind of mediocre, and he takes them to the top. You saw it at Houston, and maybe he could do it over at Florida Atlantic. It wasn't Willie Taggart. Maybe it could be Tom Herman, and now he lands his quarterback right here in Casey Thompson, which I'm not ready to give up on him. I think he has some talent.
Well, first off, I think at FAU he could definitely have a nice little run going. So I think that's perfect. It's a perfect spot for him. It really is.
Yeah, and he could be reunited, like you mentioned, with his old coach right there. He is somebody who's spent time at Nebraska, has just really never found his footing at any of these places where he wants to stay year over year. So maybe this is a place where he could finish out his college career on a high note.
I like that. All right, let's give you some more football before we bring Jeff Erickson on. The schedule is starting to leak. Even though tomorrow is the official release day of the NFL schedule for 2023, lots and lots of leaks today. First, we found out the five international games. That was given to us earlier this morning. Then we find out Jets-Dolphins on Black Friday from the Meadowlands. So Jets-Dolphins Black Friday, and Brandon Tierney at WFAN, he broke earlier this morning that week one Sunday night football game will be Dallas at the Giants.
Wow, I love it. I mean, great matchup to start things off on Sunday Night Football. When you're talking about the Giants, they're coming off such a positive season that not a lot of people thought they could do under then first-year head coach Brian Daboll, now entering his second year. Daniel Jones got paid. Saquon Barkley's contract, as we speak, is being restructured, and they're hoping to get an extension done with him soon. And the Giants have a little bit more swagger going into this season than they did before. On the flip side, with the Cowboys, it's everything that they have to prove to everybody this year. They have to prove that they can be more than just a contender. They have to prove that they can actually win in the postseason. And you know what? Forget what happens in the regular season when it comes to Dallas. It's all about the playoffs for this team. How are you going to perform at that level?
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good point. We were hoping that in week one, the Jets and Giants would play on 9/11. That was the original thought, that people were hoping that the NFL would do that and put the Jets and Giants on 9/11. But no, Dallas will be at the Giants in week one, Sunday Night Football. The Jets will play at the Giants on Sunday, October 29th, the day after Adrian's birthday. We've got Jets-Giants coming up from from the Meadowlands, and that's that's going to be MetLife Stadium, the new date for that, according to Brandon Tierney. So, again, looking at that, looking at the international games, which is going to be Falcons-Jags from Wembley on October 1st, Jags-Bills October 8th from Tottenham Hotspur Stadium in London, Ravens-Titans the following week, also from Tottenham Hotspur. And then you've got two games at Frankfurt Stadium in Germany, Dolphins-Chiefs. That should be a good one on November the 5th. And a week later, Colts-Patriots.
Yeah, a lot of quality matchups for the international games. We talked about how sometimes the Thursday night games get the, you know, the B-list or C-list matchups. Well, at least for the international games this time around, you have some quality matchups like Jags-Bills. I mean, we could be talking about that being two division leaders at that point on October 8th with Buffalo and Jacksonville going up against each other. Now, when it's the Ravens-Titans, that could also be a great matchup. And you mentioned Dolphins and Chiefs. I'm excited about Kansas City traveling internationally and playing this game as well.
I'm trying to figure out what to make of the Jags getting to play two games in a row in London. I mean, it seems so weird. Like, you give them a home game and a road game. Is Jacksonville the new adopted team of London, England?
I think so. They're the team that that travels there year after year. They have a good base out there. They always cite that the fans over there really like the Jaguars. Yeah. So, yeah, maybe make a new hub out there in UK that can be Jacksonville 2.0.
How about this? Chiefs-Bengals will air on CBS in Week 17 on Sunday, December 31st, New Year's Eve.
Why do we have to wait so long to watch that one? I mean, I hope the best players will still be playing at that point, and I hope that both teams have something to play for so we get a chance to see Joe Burrow versus Patrick Mahomes and everybody at full strength.
I agree with you. Fox is going to broadcast Eagles-Giants on Christmas Day. That's Monday, December 25th at 2:30 in the afternoon. That is the second game in the NFL's second annual Christmas Day tripleheader. It's going to fall in Week 16 of the regular season.
They're going to take advantage of every day they can, and if it's a Monday holiday, they'll take advantage of a triple header like that.
That Jets-Dolphins game we told you about on Black Friday from MetLife, 1 o'clock kickoff, Amazon Prime Video will have that game.
Okay, I like that. I feel like for the first Black Friday game, maybe not the highest quality opponent, but I'm not going to say anything against the Browns until we actually get a chance to see. Or excuse me, that was the Dolphins in that situation. Though that's a great matchup because that's a divisional matchup right there, Steve. That could have a lot of implications when it comes to the playoffs.
So I'm with you.
I like Dolphins Jets for Black Friday.
So we're getting a lot of leaks to start the day today. A lot of big matchups already getting revealed.
So it seems like right now the risk that the NFL might be taking with releasing some of these teams. The only team that I'm a little worried about is the Dolphins in particular, Steve. Miami, volatile, right? I mean, I know that they made a lot of offseason acquisitions, but that AFC East as it stands should be very competitive. I don't know if Miami is going to be this good as other people think going into the season. And also, how healthy is Tua going to be going into this year?
We'll find out soon enough, right? We will. When we come back, Jeff Erickson will join us live to talk a little fantasy football, fantasy baseball. We'll do that next, right after Charlie Wan, who will deliver this traffic update 17 past as we continue. 20 past as we continue here on Sports Talk. Time now to say hello to Jeff Erickson, rotowire.com, your one-stop shop for fantasy sports. Jeff, you'll be impressed. Adrian and I made a fantasy baseball trade yesterday in our Dynasty League.
Oh, yeah? What was the trade?
One for one. Josh Bell for Alex Kirilloff.
Are there any like contracts or salaries involved in this?
Oh, it's always a salary league. It's always a salary league. So Bell is in the expiring contract, so he'll be a free agent next year, which means Adrian can sign him to a 3-year extension. And I've already got Kirilloff locked up 4 years for essentially the minimum. So I traded him Bell. I took Kirilloff on, and I figure we both had these guys. I picked up Bell last year in a trade right after he was dealt to the Padres, so he hasn't done a thing for me in about the last, I don't know how many months, and I finally got tired of it. And Adrian has had Kirilloff since he joined the league a few years ago, and he hasn't done anything for him, so we're hoping a change of scenery helps both out.
Trade my problem for your problem.
Exactly, exactly.
I kind of think this is the Monty Hall problem. I think this is you take door number three because you don't know what's going to happen with Kirilloff. I think Bell's story has been written a little bit more, so I think I prefer getting the Kirilloff side. But, I mean, I think Bell is the safer side right now. I mean, Kirilloff could be back down in the minors just like, tomorrow. You know, he just got called back up, but, I don't know. There's not a whole lot of I don't think there's a whole lot of commitment to Kirilloff by the Twins right now.
Well, I mean, let's put it this way. You're right. It might be a bust for me. And by the way, when you make a trade in our fantasy league and you're stuck with a four-year contract, especially if the guy does not produce, it's a hard contract to unload. So you're that's a good point. You bring it up. So I told everybody around the league said that they all thought it was a pretty even trade, all things considered, that both guys have their series of issues right now.
Absolutely. It's certainly one where you can see the reasonable side for either side there. That's for sure.
There you go. All right. Well, let's do a little. Do you feel good now after the analysis from Jeff on
that? I like it. It could be a win-win. Also could be a lose-lose. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
That's true. Isn't it the beauty, though, of fantasy sports in general? You always hope for the win-win, but you got to brace yourself for the lose-lose no matter what happens.
Yeah, I was going to say, I got to go through our trade history and see how many lose-lose trades we've had in the past. Maybe some that have been hyped up and then some that have just kind of flamed out.
I think a few of us have, a few of our deals have done both in that regard. All right, let's talk about some of the other sports stories that are, at least in fantasy world, let's talk about what's relevant right now. And that's certain guys that have come up and are doing big things. Friday, there will be the Eury Pérez debut. 20 years old, the Marlins flamethrower is going to get the opportunity to start. Thoughts on this?
You know, it's the year of the young pitching prospect. We've seen a number of these. Some worked out better than others. Eury Pérez has got 42 strikeouts and 31 innings at Double-A. He was at Double-A last year, too. Only threw 75 innings, 106 strikeouts last year in those 75 innings. The one blemish on his record this year is the home run ball, allowed 5 homers in 31 innings. It's a little high, but you know, there's no doubt about it. He is, you know, a highly, highly touted prospect. Throws mid to high 90s on his fastball. He's James Anderson's number 29 prospect. The one thing I worry from a long-term perspective might be that these hard throwers tend to get hurt especially at this young age. He's not a big guy. He's someone that he's not like hefty. He's tall.
Yeah.
He's 6'8". He's really tall, and that fastball will get on you, and because of the height and that extension, I just worry sometimes about the health. But you know, looking pretty good otherwise. I'm pretty impressed so far with what he's done so far. I rushed to pick him up in my first come first serve league, and I actually got him for a rare time when I win the race to the waiver wire.
Wow, good for you. That's awesome. And by the way, you mentioned it's the year of the pitcher, the young pitcher. Bryce Miller's doing some big things in Seattle, isn't he?
He is indeed. And, you know, you like what his first two starts, especially the second one coming against the Astros, although the Astros aren't necessarily the Astros that we think of right now. With Alex Bregman scuffling, Jose Abreu doing nothing, missing Jose Altuve, it's not, you know, the lineup that we expect. But I think that nonetheless, it was pretty impressive. Mason Miller was impressive until the elbow started barking, and now I'm really concerned about him. We've seen some pretty good debuts. Tanner Bibee was impressive on his debut, less so this week, but we've seen a lot of interesting good young arms so far.
We have. I don't know anything about Louis Varland of the Minnesota Twins. You could tell me a little bit about him, please.
You know, he made his debut last year, made a couple of interesting starts last week of the season last year. Helped people do well, actually. Pitched well last night in a loss to the Padres. It wasn't on him. He only allowed one run no decision. But, you know, the funny thing about him is he kind of was unheralded in the draft. 2019, a 15th-round pick, you know, Division II school, but really added velocity. And that seems like that's a common thread. Pitcher adds velocity, maybe goes to drive line or whatever, pitching factory that you go to, and then you get instant results there. So, you know, the Ks in the minors have been high, over 10 Ks per 9 in every level of the minors. So you like seeing that. He's got a decent changeup, decent slider. The Twins are, you know, they have Tyler Malley out for a long time, Kenta Maeda out. We'll see how long these guys are out, but he, you know, Varland and Bailey Ober are getting a big opportunity right now.
Meanwhile, J.P. France has been given an opportunity in Houston because of all the injuries to Astro pitching. And he is not one of these guys that was considered a high-profile young arm. In fact, he wasn't even a top 30 guy, according to the MLB pipeline. I'm not sure where James had him. But he pitched well in his first start. Didn't give up any runs. Three hits, struck out five. He's got these cool-looking goggles and a crazy stash. What can you tell me about J.P. France?
28-year-old. This is why he's not considered a top prospect anywhere. Seemed to, you know, really turn it on this year in AAA. He spent all of last year in AAA. In fact, most of 2021, he was also at AAA. So he's kind of an organizational soldier. But if you look closely at the stat line, he's got strikeouts wherever he's pitched. It's just he's also gotten a decent number of walks. You know, his whip's always been like 1.3 or so in the minors. That's not the sign of a, you know, a pretty big time prospect, obviously. Did play good college ball at Mississippi State, 14th round pick in 2018. So, you know, and you know, like many prospects that were drafted 18 and 19, you know, 2020 was a lost year. You know, he wasn't one of the alternate training camp site guys. He's a guy that has had to kind of just work his way up slowly. And the Astros are providing opportunities right now because they have so many injuries. They lost two pitchers in 1 week in the case of Luis Garcia for the year and Jose Urquidy for most of the year. That's obviously a pretty big loss. And, you know, they chose France over Forrest Whitley, which I thought was pretty interesting. But France is the guy that's been pitching better right now, and the Astros need somebody right now.
They do. We're talking with Jeff Erickson from rotowire.com. I've got tons of injury questions to ask you about and some other rookies before that. But before we get to all that, Adrian's got one for you.
Jeff, want to ask you a little local note. It is Ivan Melendez for the Hillsborough Hops who went yard for the first time with Hillsborough. I know he's not necessarily somebody who you keep on your radar right now, but just exciting for local fans of Ivan Melendez knowing that, hey, he's having some early success in high A with the Diamondbacks organization.
Yeah, he is. You know, long term, you got to look out and see. You know, he's 23 at high A, so he's kind of a little bit high for the level. But you know, hey, you got to perform there. He had a sore left hand to begin the season, so that was something that held him back a little bit there. We'll see. This is he was a second round pick last year, so this is he's. Obviously, they think highly of him. Now it's a matter of getting him out there, getting the reps, basically, and see what happens. Diamondbacks are loaded with a bunch of good young talent, so we'll see, you know, what he can show. You want him to do it now before he gets to, he gets to AAA, for instance, there at Reno, where it's just a launching pad. So you want to see him do it at normal altitude.
More as we continue here with Jeff Erickson from RotoWire, but we're at the midway point of the show. Let's go right back to Adrian. Bottom of the hour, SportsCenter updates next. So we're back with Jeff Erickson from RotoWire.com. Hey, what a miserable season it really has been for pitching. We talk about it every week, but it gets worse and worse. Now we know Luis Garcia needs Tommy John surgery. Max Fried is going to be out at least 2 months. Same with Kyle Wright. We heard today also that Tyler Glasnow was pulled after an inning from a rehab start. Nobody knows for sure what's happening there. Max Scherzer's got neck problems. We've got problems. Problems with all these injuries piling up. Even your dog is mad about the injuries right now, Jeff.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I think he just hurt. He had Tyler Glasnow and is waiting to activate him soon. So I think that was something that really upset him there. But mild side tightness is what they said with Glasnow. You know, that would sound like trivial, but he's coming back from an oblique injury. So I'm certainly concerned about that. And it just, you know, it feels like it's worse than ever. I don't have the numbers to say one way or another whether it's worse or better. But, yeah, it's aggravating when you're this close to getting a guy back and then you have a setback like that. Hey, as my friend and colleague Scott Pianowski says, injury optimism is always a losing strategy.
That's true. By the way, we're having a debate with the cause for all these injuries. I mean, there's some people think it's because of the pitch clock and pitchers just aren't ready for it and they're hurting themselves trying to readjust because they're not recovering quick enough. What about the fact that guys just throw too hard to begin with? And maybe, again, as pitchers throw harder and harder, it just puts more wear and tear on their bodies.
Yeah, 100% true. There's – So, you know, we were talking about increased velocity in the last segment with some of these prospects. Well, you know, here's the thing. There's a correlation between improved velocity and improved performance. There's also a correlation between increased velocity and increased injuries. It's undeniable. We've seen it time after time. You throw in the high 90s, there's a good chance you're going to get hurt. It's a very rare thing. Okay, sure, Nolan Ryan didn't get hurt. Well, great. You know, how far back do we have to go for that? It's just the thing is, and it was a different era then, too, still. And, you know, just that one freak doesn't disprove the notion. Exactly. And I think that's really where we're coming from with all of this here. It's really kind of frustrating to see, but I don't see a way around it unless baseball does something else to discourage that high velocity, move the mound back, something of that nature. But then again, you never know. That could create more injuries as they try to compensate for that. There's always the law of unintended consequences.
Look, Nolan Ryan is a one in a million arm. And, Jeff, we found out, like, later in his career, in his 40s, that thanks to Advil, you know, he was able to pitch all those extra years well into his 40s.
Yeah, you know, I remember Mark Pryor. You know, he has perfect mechanics. He'll never get hurt. Oh, never mind. That was two different managers that used him pretty heavily. And he might have gotten hurt anyhow, Steve. That's the thing. You know, there's persuasive arguments, there's a theory called fundamental attribution error. We think we can identify the cause for something. But there's millions of possible causes for players to get hurt. And just the act of throwing a baseball is not natural for the elbow and shoulder, especially at high velocities. It's not something that the arm is designed, yeah, you know, to withstand. And we can do all our best to protect these pitchers, but the odds are against us. Let's put it that way.
Very well said. Meanwhile, let's talk about some young kids that are given their opportunities and will they make the most of it. I know he's not young. He's like 24 years old. But Matt Mervis gets a chance in Chicago after a lot of people hoped he would break spring training with the team. Now he gets his chance.
Yeah, and one of the few hitting prospects that we've seen promotions for so far that we've been able to bid on. Almost all the top bidding guys in free agency have been these young pitching prospects. You know, getting a hitter like Mervis in a ballpark that's a pretty good ballpark, a pretty decent lineup, you know, you're kind of hoping that he becomes the next Anthony Rizzo. I think I've seen that comparison 112 times, but it's apt. I mean, the thing I like about Mervis is he's got a really good batting eye. You know, he's been able to take his share of walks, doesn't strike out a ton. I fear that the Cubs might platoon him a little bit there, but I like the hard contact. I long term, I'm definitely bullish on him. And, you know, a lot of people first guess the Cubs. Why did they sign Eric Hosmer? Why and Trey Mancini? And they kind of addressed that already, that, you know, Hosmer's been benched already. Mervis is the guy that's stepping in that place.
He is. Let's talk about another one. Casey Schmidt, the young infielder with the Giants. I thought he was going to come up and play third, but they've got him actually playing shortstop these first couple starts.
Yeah, Brandon Crawford's out, so that kind of led to that there. And, you know, they are kind of mixing and matching to try to get that to work out. The Giants are off to a frustrating start and got smoked today by the Nats. Sean Manaea might be more like Sean Goodbye, but we'll see about that. But, you know, Schmidt is, you know, someone that is not just a kid, but he's actually a legit prospect, and kind of want to see a little bit more of this. I mean, they tried to replace Crawford with Carlos Correa this offseason. They tried to add bats to this lineup, tried to sign Aaron Judge too, and it failed. Schmidt's someone who is someone we're going to watch for. He struggled at the beginning of the year last year, and then really, like, from May 1st on last year was a lot better. And, you know, he's an excellent defensive player. He has been a third baseman most of his career, like you mentioned. So we'll see where he sticks defensively. But, you know, typically a really good third baseman can usually handle shortstop, especially if he's got any sense of mobility, which I think Schmidt does.
I do, too. Meanwhile, former Chihuahua, Astoria Ruiz, is right now 17 steals with the Oakland A's. You know, Brent Rooker was a great story. Here's a 24-year-old outfielder that's hitting .275, stealing bases, driving in some runs. He's an exciting young player to watch right now on a bad team.
He sure is. And, you know, I was dubious that he'd be able to hit at the big league level. Last year when he got the call, he hit .171, appeared to be pretty overmatched. He doesn't have a great batting eye. Four walks. guy with his speed, you want to see him to get a few more walks. 29 Ks so far this season. Hasn't homered yet this year. He topped out, I think, at 12 homers in 2018. So he's not a big power guy, and I always thought that, okay, these speed guys, when they hit the bigs, you know, they're going to get overmatched. Pitchers are going to challenge them, and they're not going to be able to handle it. Yeah, so far, so good. I mean, he's not striking out, even though he doesn't walk, only a 2.5% walk percentage, but he's also only striking out 18.5% of the time. That's perfectly acceptable. You would take that all day with him, especially with this speed. He's not trying to hit for the downs. He's putting the ball on the ground and running it out. And his line drive percentage jumped from 18.5 last year to 26 so far this year. So that's what you like to see.
Let's talk about the website, what you've got up right now at rotowire.com. You've got the imminent arrivals column with Chris Crawford for fantasy prospect hounds like myself and like Adrian. A lot of daily stuff as well on the site right now.
Oh, absolutely. And the Chris Crawford article is really good because he kind of tracks guys that you can try to speculate on before they get the call. Like he's highlighting Christian and Encarnacion Strand among those that are probably likely to get the call pretty soon. And it's a good way for you to get a little bit of a jump on the competition before these guys get called up.
Meanwhile, you also have some really interesting video content. Alan Seslowski in football, the 7 rookie smart dynasty players are drafting. And you've got a column on the NFL holiday schedule leaks coming out. So already you guys are on it as far as all the latest news and notes regarding the NFL schedule.
Yeah, I'm excited. My Bengals are going to play the Chiefs in Week 17 and rematch of the last two AFC championships, and I think it'll be the sixth time in 3 years the two teams will play, or the fifth time in 3 years, and then we'll see what happens in the playoffs if they get there again, too. But we're definitely excited about the possibility of these teams facing each other.
Did you want that that game earlier, though? Do you like it towards the end of the season, Week 17, or did you want that like Week 1, Week 2, Week 3? What do you think?
I would say middle of the season, to be honest. After they get their bearings, and you know, I don't know. I want it to definitely have meaning. It might have an intense meaning. It might be a battle to see who gets home field in the playoffs, which we know is always pretty huge. So then again, it might be like, okay, it's Week 17. We got one more week after this. We're kind of already settled. Who knows? Injuries will be obviously who these teams are without will be a storyline there too.
Jeff, the draft kit is already out right now at RotoWire for football, and fans can actually check it out if they go to the website right now and even put a free 10-day subscription out there.
Indeed, they can. So check it out, rotowire.com/free. Gets you a peek behind the paywall, no credit card required.
All right. We'll talk to you next week, Jeff. Thanks for the time, as always.
All right. You bet. Thanks, Steve.
Jeff Erickson, as we continue from RotoWire. 42 past. More in a moment. Stay with us. Sports Talk continues. We'll have Jay Jaffe about 40 minutes from now, right here, 600 ESPN El Paso. 50 past the hour as we continue narrowing it down here on Sports Talk and winding down hour 2 of 3. Still to come, Jay Jaffe, and plenty more for you here on 600 ESPN El Paso. We talked about the schedule leaks earlier. In the first hour, we threw out a trivia question. It's so interesting. We talked about the last time a UTEP men's team won the national championship. We never talk about this, and it's not fair. We really should. But when you actually look at the UTEP track and field record book, it is beyond staggering to see how they dominated in the mid to late 70s and early 80s in track and field, indoor and outdoor. I mean, just to give you an idea, folks, okay? UTEP won their first outdoor national championship under Ted Banks in 1975. Then they split the national title with UCLA in 78, won in 79, 80, 81, and 82. So think about that. I mean, I know that they tied for the national championship with UCLA in 78, but that is 5 years in a row, five in a row, that UTEP won the outdoor national championship in college athletics. And then when you look at the indoor national titles, that's even more amazing. 74, 75, 76, three in a row, Washington State wins in 77. UTEP wins it in 78. Villanova then wins in 79. And UTEP wins in 80, 81, and 82. That is unreal. So from 1974 to 1982, UTEP had a total of 6 outdoor national championships and 7 indoor national championships. That's staggering, Adrian.
Yeah, it's just dominance too, Steve. You talk about the 70s and 80s. UTEP ruled the country in track and field and all they were able to do, both indoor, outdoor. And then you think about, you know, decades after, it's all the individual, you know, and it's not to say that back then it wasn't either, but it was all about, you know, the individual athletes on the track side of things post 2000, you know, all the different players who came to UTEP.
We haven't even talked about cross country. In cross country, they won their first national title in 69 under Wayne Vandenberg. And then again in 75, 76, 78, 79, 80, 81, and 83. But 83 was controversy, Adrian.
That's exactly right. In fact, there is you know, a little bit of misconception with that 1983 championship. UTEP had that one later vacated after allegations of slush funds and payments to athletes under their new coach at the time. And you know, it would take another decade for the Miners to actually return to the NCAA meet. You know, since at that point, so it's so interesting that they had that title. They hung the banner, but it was later vacated.
All I know is this. When you talk about dominance, nothing that this university has ever done compares to what track and field was like in the 70s and 80s. I mean, and really up to like 82, 83. That's where it stops. But because there's plenty of Olympians, plenty of individual champions. But as far as the team goes and what the team accomplished, I mean, you know, it's a forgotten era. It's a forgotten age, and it shouldn't be, because UTEP track and field was not just the best for a while, but, I mean, we're talking, you know, a 5 to 8 year stretch where they did it all. They did it on indoor, indoor, outdoor, and cross country.
Yeah, it was just dominance. And it feels like if it wasn't for those teams, UTEP would not have a lot of banners to be proud of in any of their sports. And yeah, we're having to look decades back to talk about some of these NCAA titles, but still, hey, it just shows you what a decade of dominance they had.
Ted Banks is like the John Wooden of track and field at UTEP when you
Very
look at what
true.
He did.
I like that.
It's unbelievable. All right, 2 hours in the books. We got one more to go as we continue here on Sports Talk. 505-6009. Great to have you with us. 600 ESPN El Paso.
Liberty Schoolyard Sports Studio. Here's Steve Kaplowitz and Adrian Broaddus.
Welcome back, everybody, as we continue. Final hour. Jay Jaffe coming up. Knicks down 10 after 1 to the Heat. Look, if you've watched this series, you realize something. The Knicks usually have one bad quarter and then three very even quarters against Miami. They don't outscore them hardly ever. At least not in the last few games. And as long as Miami outscores the Knicks, they win the game. So it was like that in the second quarter in game number 5. And now here we are in game 4. Here we are in game 5 with the Knicks already down 3-1, down by 10. They look like a team that basically has packed it in unless they show you something here in the next 3 quarters.
Very disappointing. I mean, just absolutely disappointing. Quinn Grimes gets the start today. Josh Hart coming off the bench. I am okay with the move, but it just hasn't worked out so well for this team. Brunson just hasn't had a good series, but I'm not putting the blame on him. I'm putting the blame on Julius Randle. What happened to him this postseason? Forget this series right here. This entire postseason, he has been absent. He has been disappointing for the Knicks. And I'm wondering if we're headed toward an offseason in which the Knicks look to deal away Julius Randle, who just made an all-NBA team today, Steve. I can't believe this.
28 years old. He averaged 25 and 10. Had a great regular season. He really did. But, you know, he's been awful in this postseason, and he's so far he's 1 of 7 shooting in this first quarter.
you know, I'll give him a little bit of a pass knowing that he came into the postseason with an injury. But, I mean, still, you've got to step up when it matters. When you have success in the regular season, that's fine. But still, I want him to be better than what he was in the postseason, especially knowing that the Knicks were a legit contender. The East is wide open. They could have stole things in this conference.
Meanwhile, when you look at Miami, balanced across the board. Strus has 8, 6 for Butler, and then a bunch of players have 2. Love, Adebayo, Vincent, Robinson, and Martin all with 2. I mean, that's – and I'll tell you something else, okay? It's time. It is time that we look at Eric Spoelstra as one of the best coaches in the NBA. This guy, for years, was never given the credit because – The old adage was, well, anybody could have coached the big three. Not true. And you know what? He's really kind of, to me, earned his reputation in all the years after that. And Eric Spoelstra has been one of the best coaches in the league for a long time, yet he's never usually on that short list.
How about this, Steve? Guess how many Coach of the Year awards, the meaningless Coach of the Year awards, Eric Spoelstra has won?
Zero.
Zero. How crazy is that? 14 winning seasons, 2 NBA titles, and yet he has 0 Coach of the Year honors. I feel like we should just give it to him by default. Even if the Heat limp into the playoffs as an 8th seed and they drop a game in the play-in, they still have a chance here to head to the Eastern Conference Finals. And if it's the 76ers, well, that's a rematch of Jimmy Butler going up against his former team in the Philadelphia 76ers. And if it's the Celtics, then that's a rematch of last year's Eastern Conference Finals, which ended up being a game winner that could have gone in from Jimmy Butler in that series. So, yeah, this is going to be a lot of fun.
Meanwhile, he's got a career record of 704 and 491. It's like almost a 600 win percentage. He's been, you know, he's been really, really good. And, you know, went to the NBA Finals, 4 years ago? Lost. You know, he had his 2 back-to-back titles in 2011 and 2013. But, I mean, I'm an Eric Spoelstra fan. I really am. Terrific coach.
Yeah, he really is. He also he gets the most out of his players. Like Cody Zeller, a lot of people just write him off, and they get a lot of production from him. Duncan Robinson, he was an afterthought on this team, but when Tyler Hero broke his hand before the postseason, Duncan Robinson has been a go-to guy off the bench as a three-point specialist. So he gets the most out of his players. Eric Spoelstra is a fantastic coach. And this kind of reminds me of that team that he had who went to the bubble championship in 2020. If he has a nice run here with this squad, who's to say they can't go to the NBA Finals?
Yeah, I'm interested to see how that goes. You're right, they can. Although, the way the Celtics have been playing in this series, I mean, it's anybody's guess if it's going to be Miami or Philly going to the NBA Finals. You don't think it's going to be Boston right now, that's for sure. They just seem like... I can't even explain it. I mean, they're just a team that seems to, instead of rise up to the challenge, they do the exact opposite.
Don't you kind of feel like they need a tough player? Like, they don't have any toughness on their team. That's my biggest problem with the Celtics. I'm watching them, and it's like all these guys who no one is rising up to that occasion. They don't have a P.J. Tucker on their team, and I'm not telling you P.J. Tucker is a difference maker. You look at his stat line, it's very unimpressive, but I still feel like he's a glue guy, an enforcer, somebody who really sets you over the top, and who can set your stars in place. Boston doesn't have a player like that on their roster.
Al Horford plays 25 minutes yesterday, goes 0 of 7 shooting, does not score, and finishes with a minus 18, and that's part of the problem right now if you're the Celtics. That reunion has not worked out the way they hoped.
Yeah, and it's like it's a hot or cold game every night from Al Horford. Some nights he's hitting 5 threes, other nights he can't hit a shot. And I do point the finger, you know, I put a lot of blame on Rob Williams. I also put, you know, blame on guys like Grant Williams. They don't get production from their bench. Rob Williams was supposed to be a center who could spell Al Horford. Horford in those minutes that he can't play. And Rob Williams has just been hurt ever since he got into the NBA. He's just never healthy on a night-to-night basis. Grant Williams, they work out a little extension for him in the offseason, and he's not, he's a non-factor in this series as well.
But unless the Celtics come back and win these next two games, which is probably unlikely, it's another 57-win season that becomes a waste when you lose in the second round.
Yeah, and a lot of people are asking, what if Ime Udoka stayed as their head coach all season long? And, you know, they fired him for reasons internally. He had a really bad, a scandal internally involving relationships that came as a shock to a lot of their front office executives. Regardless, they go with Joe Mazzulla, and he has just not been the right coach for them, in my opinion. Does not make the good in-game adjustments, and he is not that kind of fiery coach like Ime Udoka was, who held his stars like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown accountable through these games.
Look, Udoka was a superstar, and then all of a sudden has his personal indiscretions, and the next thing you know, completely vanishes out of thin air for a couple seasons.
Yeah, I don't get it, man. I just would say that for the Celtics right here, they're going to have to take a hard look in the mirror over the offseason. Who knows, maybe Brad Stevens comes out of the front office and then goes back to the bench and coaches this team when it's all said and done.
It could happen. It could happen. Meanwhile, tonight... before we get to the Lakers Golden State, let's talk about last night's big win by Denver over Phoenix. Denver is so tough at home, and as much momentum as Phoenix had, they just are not able to come close to duplicating that effort on the road.
Yeah, it was actually a down game from Booker, and it's his first bad game, and you can't even call it bad. He had 28 points, but he was 8 of 19 shooting, hit only 4 threes. They need him to be like a superstar in order for them to win these games. They're leaning too much on guys like Landale off the bench, and Phoenix just doesn't have the depth. I'm not sold on this team. I think the Nuggets win here in 6 in this one.
Again, Durant and Booker scored 52 of Phoenix's 102 points. And other than that, you had DeAndre Ayton with 14, and nobody else really finished in double figures. But Denver, understand, they're at their best like last night. Balance, not asking Jokic to score 50-something points. He scores 29. But then Porter gives you 19. Murray gives you 19. You had 25 off the bench from Brown. That was a huge performance for Bruce Brown, who, he's not that guy. I mean, he's a bench guy that gives you 10 a game, but he went off yesterday and was a big factor for them.
Denver should be everybody's favorite to come out of the West right now. They are 34-7 overall at home. They are unbelievable when they play in Denver. They're just unstoppable, too. And Phoenix, they had to face that yesterday and just could not overcome it. I liked what they did in the first half and just was not enough to beat this Denver team. If Denver goes up against the Lakers, which a lot of people think could happen here in the Western Conference Finals, I'd still give the edge to Denver, knowing what kind of home team they have.
Meanwhile, I ripped the Knicks. They take out Julius Randle. They're on a 12-2 run, and suddenly it's a 26-26 basketball game in the second quarter.
Wow, I don't get it, man. It's a little Ewing theory there, right, Steve? What's going on with Julius Randle?
Julius Randle was awful in the first quarter, and you want to know something? I give Thibodeau credit. He went to his bench. He went to Obi Toppin. Toppin's been terrific, and the Knicks have found a way to respond, and that's great. And they just made another basket, an and-one from Brunson. So all of a sudden, the Knicks have come alive, and the fans are going nuts at the Garden, and maybe that's what it took. Maybe it took getting Julius Randle the heck out of the game for them to wake up right now.
Yeah, Toppin and Hartenstein can definitely take over those Mitchell Robinson-Randle minutes. I like the fact that those two are playing right now, and playing strong. So Josh Hart coming off the bench, Quentin Grimes starting the game for them. Let's see what happens here for the Knicks.
Well, you know when Ben Stiller is tweeting good things that the Knicks are doing all right.
Now we just need Stephen A. to chime in at halftime.
I'm sure that'll come. Before we go to break and come back with Jay Jaffe as we continue here on Sports Talk, tonight, can the Warriors stave off elimination, or will the Lakers find a way to put Golden State out of their misery?
Warriors are heavy favorites in tonight's game, which tells me, does LeBron James, Anthony Davis kind of coast in this one, really have their eyes set on game 6 and not really put too much stock in this game? Or on the flip side, does LeBron and AD think, hey, let's just finish it now. Let's get this series done with and over with now. Golden State, I kind of feel like the Lakers have figured them out. And if the Lakers are able to get a strong Anthony Davis game, this is, you know, it's kind of a 50-50 one. It could be a toss-up and the Lakers could go home in five winning this series.
I seriously doubt it. They're 8-point favorites, meaning Golden State is 8-point favorites. Golden State is 33-8 at home. I feel like this game will be a double-digit blowout win for the Warriors. And then if the Lakers are going to do it, they'll have to. Game six is going to be it. That's the game. They're going to need to go back to L.A. and just finish the job against Golden State. At least that's what I think.
Yeah, I totally see where you're coming from there. And it could also be Draymond Green's last game as a Golden State Warriors in Chase Center in front of all of the Golden State Warrior fans. So another thing to keep an eye out for.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. All right. Good stuff as we continue here on Sports Talk. I'll tell you this much. Do you really see Draymond Green ever playing anywhere else besides Golden State?
Yeah,
I
think this offseason, the Jordan Poole, Draymond Green thing, something has to give. If they trade away Jordan Poole and find a suitable trade partner, and then they keep Draymond and have him opt into his player option that he has over the offseason, then that's how I could talk myself into them keeping him. But I kind of see him leaving, man. Chicago could overpay for him. Dallas could overpay for him. There are teams out there who need an enforcer. Maybe he's not the same player he was 5 years ago, but yeah, I could see him walking away.
All right, well, keep an eye on that one, folks. We'll come back. Jay Jaffe joining us next as we continue here on Sports Talk. But first, let's go to Charlie One and get ourselves another traffic update. Welcome back, everybody. As we continue here on Sports Talk, you know what time it is. Time to talk a little baseball and beer with this man, Jay Jaffe, who joins us every week from Fangraphs.com. In fact, Jay's got some new articles up on Nolan Arenado and more about the Cardinals, and even had a Fangraphs chat yesterday that is up on the site right now. Jay, welcome back. And man, oh man, why don't we begin with the Cardinals? Because you know what? It has been a miserable start to the season for a team that everybody expected to be right there at the top of the division. Plenty of time to climb out of it, but man, it's so hard to really peg this team, their troubles, and really how bad it's been for them this season.
Yeah, I mean, they're worse than their record suggests. I mean, they got off to their worst 35-game start in half a century and their worst 34-game start since 1907, when they were 10-24 there. Since then, they've put on a little three-game winning streak here to get better. But you know, part of their problem is that they've gone 1-7 in one-run games to start things out, and just giving up runs at inopportune times, especially by the bullpen. But the real root of it, I think, is the rotation. It's always in the last few years, the Cardinals have struggled to build a rotation that misses enough bats. You know, they've got a lot of injuries. Jack Flaherty, who was once a budding ace, has really kind of gone downhill. Adam Wainwright didn't make his season debut until Saturday. It's just been dog meat back there, and a lot of dissatisfaction. And then the weirdness from this weekend, when they decided that Wilson Contreras, the marquee free agent, would no longer catch for a while, it just looked absurd, a means of scapegoating a badly built roster.
And you followed that story up with the Nolan Arenado slump that you talked about the next day.
Yeah, Arenado, I mean, you know, this is a guy who could have won MVP last year and maybe should have instead of Paul Goldschmidt. I mean, he plays a tougher defensive position. He's elite at the defense. The two were neck and neck in terms of value. But he is off to a really troubling start this year. Just has not been hitting the ball hard, probably as weak as ever, struggling with the fastball. Just really his timing is out of whack. And, you know, maybe it's just a slump and it's coming at an inopportune time. Again, I don't even think it's like one of the Cardinals' top two or three problems, but it's something they need to fix.
Yeah, they do. And yet I wonder, because, you know, Jordan Walker was playing out of position when he came up to start the season. He's really a third baseman, and they put him out in right field. And you could tell his defensive metrics just weren't good enough. So he's now back in AAA trying to learn the outfield. And you can't just have Jordan Walker come back and replace Arenado because of the salary and the kind of ball player he is. So it's really a tough spot right now for the Cards, who have too many outfielders and can't figure out a way to juggle all of them.
Yeah, and now they have too many designated hitters, too, because they've decided that, for the moment, Contreras is going to be DHing, which takes away Nolan Gorman, another third baseman who's been bumped off of his position, who plays second base pretty roughly. So anytime you can shoehorn him in the lineup as the DH, you're probably better off than letting him grab the leather here. So, you know, they've been trying to figure out an outfield mix. When they sent Walker down, John Mozeliak, the president of baseball operations, said that players are complaining they're not getting into their rhythm. They don't know their playing time, and you know, it feels like he's scapegoating the players for his own roster building mistakes.
Jay Jaffe with us here on Sports Talk as we continue from Fangraphs.com. It has been such a rough season for pitching injuries. We found out last week Luis Garcia is going to have Tommy John surgery. This week you have the ace of the Braves, Max Fried, on the IL with a strained left forearm. Found out that the Phillies had to put Jose Alvarado, who's been terrific this season, on the IL right now with elbow inflammation. And I've been talking about this with some buddies who I play fantasy baseball with. They're convinced that it is because of the pitch clock that all these pitchers are getting hurt. What are your thoughts on just the frequency of injuries, and do you think there's a correlation?
I mean, we've seen such high injury rates in recent years. You know, that people are always trying to connect it to something or other. You know, the ramping up of innings after the pandemic shortened season, the short spring training last year. It's always something. You're never going to get enough scientific evidence that this is the cause of a wave of injuries. I mean, I think, you know, high velocity is the cause of these injuries. Maybe there's something to the idea that the pitch clock is contributing here. I mean, part of the thought with the pitch clock was that guys were going to dial it back just a little bit because they needed to pace themselves better. If they're not pacing themselves better, well, you know, this is a matter of adaptation here, and these guys who think they're going to hump it up at the same intensity as they were before, maybe they have to rethink that approach.
I think you hit on something that's more important than the pitch clock and more important than anything else we've discussed, and that is pitchers throw too hard. They do. They throw too hard, and I don't think that the arm is designed to take the kind of force and velocity that the game has evolved into right now. There's only, you know, a guy like Nolan Ryan, hey, that's a one in a million arm. But for every Nolan Ryan, nowadays you've got guys that are, I mean, surgery is so routine, it's almost as if they don't have surgery at some point in their career, you're looking around going, what's wrong? Because that's become now the norm.
Yeah, it is really dismaying, and you know, we've seen it's the never ending quest for strikeouts and for velocity, and certainly, you know, the numbers bear it out that it's harder to hit a harder throwing pitcher, within the analytics movement, it's been obvious that pitchers who strike out more batters are the ones who have the greater effectiveness and greater predictability in terms of long-term success. But that's kind of mitigated or offset by the higher injury rates that come with it.
Jay, my 10-year-old is playing in 12U this year, and the mound is 50 feet from the plate. And there's a kid who throws 70 miles an hour.
Wow. So that's going to be a lot, especially because of the shorter distance. that ball gets on you pretty quickly.
It does. And just imagine a 10-year-old trying to hit the ball and also make sure that if the ball comes up and in, they can get out of the way. And that's what I'm saying. It's not even just a big league thing anymore. Nowadays, kids are throwing harder than they've ever thrown before.
Right, right. Well, that was always something that, in recent years, sports medicine has looked at. The ASMI, where James Andrews, the foremost orthopedic surgeon, is part of the group, they did a study a few years ago and came up with some recommendations as far as youth and not throwing too hard, not throwing year round. Was also a big factor. They want you to take time off and rest your arm. A whole bunch of recommendations. This was back when the wave of Tommy John surgeries was just absolutely appalling. This is maybe about 2016 or so.
Yeah, I'm hearing you on that one. All right, you mentioned Arenado's slump a little while ago. How do we really explain what's going on with Carlos Correa in Minnesota? He got booed yesterday and said that he would boo himself, too. He's now hitting 185. He had six runners left on base. And, here's a guy that signed a $200 million contract with the Twins in January and took less money, actually, from Minnesota than the Giants and the Mets because of his ankle and his health. And unfortunately, Minnesota is not having a great season, and Correa is clearly in one of the worst early slumps of his career.
Yeah, I'm really not sure what's going on there. The numbers are obviously down. He's not hitting the ball as hard as usual. But when he does make contact, he's still hitting it. With some authority. His barrel rate is above 11%. His hard hit rate is above 45%. Those are pretty good numbers. His StatCast expected stats are well ahead of his actual stats. His expected batting average based on the quality of contact he's made is .238, where he's actually hitting .185, and slugging percentage is higher as well. Those are, that doesn't account for everything that's going on, but it is at least some of it. And I imagine he's probably got some mechanical issues here, it's a matter of reviewing video and correcting his flaws, although there may be a physical reason, too. I mean, sometimes guys, they get in bad habits to try to work through a minor injury, and suddenly they've really messed up their swings and got to go rebuild it.
More with Jay as we keep things moving here on the show. But first, let's get right back to Adrian. He's standing by with this SportsCenter update. All right, Adrian, thank you very much. Jay Jaffe joining us right now from Fangraphs.com as we continue talking baseball. Hey, here's an interesting story. Have you ever stayed at the Feister Hotel in Milwaukee, Wisconsin?
I have not stayed there. However, I did have a get-together there when I my first marriage back in 2005, when we welcomed the out-of-town guests. I had my wedding in Milwaukee because it was to a Milwaukee native. We had a get-together for out-of-town guests there, and it was at the Feister, and cool old hotel. I didn't learn the history of it at the time. It was only later. I know they also held the winter meetings there several times back when Bud Selig was a big wig in the game and had the power to bring people to a cold weather city for the winter meetings.
Meanwhile, this is an interesting one. Mookie Betts apparently decided not to stay in the hotel with the rest of the team. He had an Airbnb that he stayed with some friends over the course of this series, as he quoted, just in case any ghosts, specters, or ghouls were to appear at the Feister.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. I mean, Mookie's a very smart guy. This is a little out of character, but I think he was, I think he's being a little silly there. But, baseball players are a superstitious bunch, and this doesn't surprise me in some ways that somebody somewhere is going to do this. I mean, it's better than the conspiracy theories that some athletes spout.
That's true. That is very true. Meanwhile, the AL East right now is as stacked top to bottom as it gets. The Yankees won today, and they're still in last, 8.5 back of Tampa Bay. And yet, Jay, they're 4 games over 500. I'm trying to recall if we've had a divisional race in the month of May where you had every single team playing, you know, 4 or 5 over 500 or better, and yet, you know, last place still was a team like the Yankees.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it's happened before, even towards the end of the year, but I can't remember. It's certainly something that we're going to have to do some research on if this goes on here. You know, the Yankees have started to play a little bit better, and they got Aaron Judge back yesterday. So they're starting to show some signs of life. Certainly, playing the A's, who are the game's doormat right now, helped. They're going to get a test though because they face the Rays next, and the Rays are still playing great baseball.
Yeah, they are. Meanwhile, the Pirates have come back down to earth, and they barely lead the Brewers in the NL Central. We'll monitor that. But the Rays have been magnificent, 29-8, best record in the game. However, the Braves are not that far behind. They've been hot as of late, and they're now up to 25-11.
Yeah, boy, the Braves, they've got some pitching issues that they're going to have to sort out here. Losing Max Fried, as you noted earlier, to a forearm strain, and Kyle Wright having more shoulder difficulties, and they lost Ian Anderson to Tommy John surgery after sending him down. I don't know how they're going to get through this this next stretch here with so many injuries, but they're a deep organization. I mean, last year they came up with Spencer Strider when they needed another starter, and Kyle Wright, who'd never really done much of had much success as a former first-round pick, had a breakout and was the game's only 20-game winner. So I know they've got some good prospects. I did some research on the team earlier this spring, and I imagine we're going to be seeing some new faces in that rotation as they battle to maintain their lead in the National League East.
What are you going to be writing about for us the rest of the week here at Fangraphs?
I am working on a tribute to Vida Blue, who passed away over the weekend. Obviously, a very colorful career. Was one of the great pitching phenoms of all time. MVP and Cy Young at age 21. Covers of national magazines and all that. And had some drug problems later in his career, and worked to try to overcome that and to help others. Deal with similar problems, and just a very interesting guy all around.
I met Vida Blue when I was a kid on a couple of occasions when we would go up to watch the Giants train in the Phoenix area back in the early 80s when he pitched for them. And I got to tell you, this was long before the days of the way baseball is now in the spring, where it's so difficult for fans and players to mix. The Giants complex used to be wide open, and players and fans alike could take pictures and talk and have conversations. Vida Blue was without a doubt the most approachable, fan-friendly human being I'd ever remember seeing as a kid. Tons of autographs, took pictures, loved to chat with the fans, about as good a human being as you could ever find during those early days in the 80s when we would go up to Arizona for spring training.
Oh, that's awesome. I know my cousin, who's a few years older than me and lives in the Bay Area, got to take batting practice off him at one point and talked about what a thrill that was.
Very nice. All right, we'll look forward to hearing reading that from you here in the next few days. Meanwhile, let's do our beer pick of the week. Jay, what would you like to focus on this week?
All right, I had this week, I actually ordered a delivery yesterday of some beer from the craft place down the street because I couldn't get out with my wife out for a while, and I was babysitting my daughter here. But one of the Threes beers that I ordered, they were out of stock. So they gave me, this was All Things Must Pass, a Czech lager from Bunker Brewing in Maine. And I have to say, I really liked it. A little bit of nuttiness, very nice spring lager. Just a really refreshing beer. I think it was 5.4% ABV. Looking at it now, I've heard of Bunker, but I'm not sure I've ever had any of their stuff before. But I'll be keeping an eye out because I know a friend of mine who lives up near Portland speaks highly of them.
Nicely done. All right, Jay, excellent way to wrap us up. Appreciate the time as always, and we'll look forward to having you right back here with us again next week.
All right, great, Steve. Thanks a lot.
He's Jay Jaffe, folks, from Fangraphs. Follow him on Twitter at @Jay_Jaffe and tune in every Wednesday at this time to hear us talk a little baseball and beer. Come back with more in a moment. Sports Talk continues. It's 600 ESPN El Paso.